Willie and Eric, you good then?
Good evening, everyone. We're going to get started tonight. I ask we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Dr. Enix.
Present.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
Mr. Klum.
Present. Thank you. So before we get started with our regular council meeting and agenda items, we're going to be having a public hearing, another public hearing this evening. This public hearing is to accept public comment on two zoning text amendments from Darlene Heller, our Director of Planning and Zoning, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Bethlehem at Part 13 of the codified ordinances entitled Miscellaneous, and also amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Bethlehem at Part 13 of the codified ordinances entitled Design Standards. The Community Development Committee reviewed the proposed zoning amendments at its September 6, 2022 meeting and voted 3-0 to recommend that the amendments be forwarded to full council and be subject to this public hearing. And that was Communication 6A. The public hearing is called to order concerning the two amendments of the zoning ordinance. I will recognize a representative from the administration.
Good evening. So thank you for hearing this. We have two amendments, as you noted. I can go through one and see if you have any questions or comments, and then we'll do the other. And I'll start with the one with miscellaneous amendments, if that's all right. And I'll just go through these chronologically, sort of through the list that we have. And just to preface this, I know that at least a few of you are familiar with these now, but we continue to look at the ordinance on an ongoing basis. We adopted it initially in 2012, but we try to look for things that maybe the wording hasn't been clear and we've been stumbling on some of that. Maybe there's sections that are repetitively going to the zoning hearing board for approval and it just becomes unnecessary. Maybe sort of there's some things that just seem to be working inefficiently, but we try to go back and clean up the ordinance from time to time. So some of these may seem extremely random and minor, but that's the way it is when we go through the ordinance that way. The first is that we have a provision for the Build 2 line for front building setbacks. And in the core area of the city, what we want you to do is match infill structures with existing structures on the block. So this provision states that you should be within 5 feet front or back from the majority of the buildings that also are on the block. Right now that applies to CB, which is the Central Business District, and CL, which is Limited Commercial, which is zoning that you would see on East or West Broad or East 4th Street, something there like that. We're proposing that that provision should also be added to the RT Residential Zoning District, which is the most dense residential district in the city, so that we would be matching up infill development with the front building setback line in that district. Section 2, we require clear sight triangles at corners for safety for vehicles so that they can see around the corner when they're coming to a stop sign or to a corner. There are some exemptions to that, a utility pole or a sign, something like that. We're proposing that a porch post could be added to that. Sometimes we want people to build to the corner, but at the corner you would have a porch or something that would be open. And we've actually had to send people to the zoning hearing board for the porch post being in the clear sight triangle, which is just not practical for people to do. So we would like to change that. The third item is related to drive-throughs. We limit where they can go, and we require that they be to the rear, preferably, or to the side. If they cannot be to the rear or the side, we're proposing that we that the language be added that if a drive-through is proposed at any location other than the rear of the building, then the design of that drive-through should be reviewed by the Planning Commission. That is new language. The next section is related strictly to parking. Right now, for multifamily dwellings and apartments, we require 1.75 parking spaces per unit. We are proposing to reduce that. Part of it is that we recognize that we have excess parking in the downtown areas for the new developments that are being constructed. They don't need as much parking as they typically used to. We're also trying to make the city more walkable, more bike friendly. We prefer that people bike and walk in the core of the city. And also the Climate Action Plan is looking for ways to reduce impervious coverage. So we are proposing that that be reduced to from 1 3/4 spaces per unit to 1.5 spaces per unit in the future. We do have requirements that if there is no ability to park on street, that you increase that a little bit so that there's additional parking available. We would reduce that from 2 spaces per unit to 1.75. And the section below that is new, section III. We're looking for ways to encourage affordable units or workforce units. So for those units, we would propose to reduce the required parking to 1 parking space per unit. We have a definition for workforce units elsewhere in the ordinance, and we just refer to that. In section 5, we are looking at the size of wall and projecting signs in the core of the district. So signs cannot exceed 20% of the building face. In CB and CL right now, that's also maxed at 200 square feet. And we find that sometimes, even though it's not exceeding 20% of the building face, that sometimes the buildings do exceed the 200 square feet. And so we're proposing to remove that from the CB zoning district. They still would have the limit of 20% of the building face, but we would remove the cap of 200 square feet. The next section, section 6, is related to multifamily dwellings. It's in the multifamily dwelling section and special provisions. We have a provision that there has to be 15 feet between the building and the parking, and that needs to be in green space. And right now it's not required in CB and CL and IRR. We're proposing that also be added to the RT section again, which is denser residential development. It really is impractical often for people to provide it there, and so we're proposing that it be removed from that section or exempted from that section. Also in the multifamily dwelling section, next one is section 7, we're proposing to completely eliminate the additional front yard requirement. It says that you really need to have twice the typical front yard development for multifamily dwellings. And again, we're trying to have buildings closer to the front of the street and put the parking in the back. And so that's really not something we want to continue to encourage or propose. So we're just proposing to eliminate that section. The next, section 8, comes out of the administrative section for the Zoning Hearing Board. And really, these are some cleanup items. And this language is taken out of the municipality's planning code, which is the state legislation that allows us to do planning and zoning. We just refer to that as the MPC. So this is language that comes straight out of the MPC. A zoning hearing board member cannot hold any other elected or appointed office in the city, cannot be an employee of the city. We are removing the mayor's ability to remove any zoning hearing board members for cause. That's not permitted by the MPC. And we are adding provisions about removal that are permitted in the MPC. So that's really just cleanup language to keep us in line with the state legislation. The next section, section 9, we've had some prior discussion about. There is a section that talks about who can initiate a zoning amendment. Right now, the ordinance says that a zoning amendment can be initiated by a city council, planning commission, or a petition by one or more citizens. But practically speaking, what really happens is that our office generally drafts and writes ordinance amendments. Typically, we forward them to the planning commission for them to flush them out and review them. And that's how they get to city council. But it doesn't specifically say that the Planning and Zoning Bureau can do that. So this really just adds it as a clarification, I guess you could say. And the section below that, section 10, talks about what the timing of that would be. And section 10 proposes that the language for the timing of that would be the same as the timing that we have in the ordinance related to any city council proposal. So we're trying to be consistent in that regard. The last section on the last page, section 11, comes out of Article 1327, and this is from the newer article of the zoning ordinance, probably the most recent amendment that we had related to the student housing overlay district. We've had questions about interpretation of these provisions, and so the changes here really are just to clarify the language. It doesn't change the meaning or the intent as far as we're concerned, but it cleans up the language to say where student housing is permitted and where the boundaries of the student housing overlay exist. So those are the items point by point for the miscellaneous. If you have questions, we can do this now, or do you want me to just go into the next one?
If you just will go into the next one, then we'll take all questions at one time.
Okay.
Thank you, Michelle.
Sure. The next one is related to design standards. We have a full chapter on design standards right now. There were a couple of chapters that referred relief, if someone needed relief or a waiver from the zoning ordinance provisions, that they could seek relief through the City Planning Commission. You already did clean up one of those. IR and IRR stated that if someone wanted relief from the provisions, they could go to the Planning Commission. We had already cleaned that one up a couple of months ago, and this basically is the same thing. Many of the design standards, we can't send things to the Planning Commission, really. The Planning Commission has jurisdiction over the Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance. The Zoning Hearing Board has jurisdiction over the Zoning Ordinance, and so we need to keep those separate. And so this intends to do that. The other thing that we talked about with the Law Bureau was the fact that some of the provisions that were in the design standards, some were repetitious from other sections. As far as trees and things like that, we cover those in other sections of the zoning ordinance or SALDO. Or the concern was that some of the sections just really didn't belong in a zoning ordinance. They should be a part of the subdivision and land development ordinance. So that's an ordinance that we're finalizing now, and what we would be doing is taking some of these that are appropriate and putting them in the SALDO. So we're removing most all of this article. We're keeping the language that talks about keeping the garage doors to the side of the buildings, keeping the parking out of the front of the buildings, and basically the rest of that is proposed to be deleted.
Thank you, Ms. Heller, for going through everything point by point. I'll turn to members of council for any questions or comments for Ms. Heller. I just had one quick one. If you can educate me briefly, Ms. Heller, what is a workforce unit?
I think that sometimes there's some misunderstanding about when we talk about an affordable unit. People sometimes think about a subsidized housing unit, and a workforce unit really is, it's an affordable unit, but it's a unit that a young professional would be able to afford. A young teacher starting out, or a nurse, or common comparisons that people use, a young police officer. They are professionals, but their salary starting out still does not afford them some of the market rate units that we're seeing constructed at this point in time. So there is a more clear definition that talks about median income in the region and the price range that a unit would fall based on median income. And so that does change over time. But for workforce units, we're really trying to look at a range of pricing for both rental and owner-occupied units for residents that really are just starting out or are struggling in some other way, but not necessarily a subsidized unit.
Thank you. And then in section 4, subsection 3, that addresses workforce units, is the motivation there with reducing it to one parking space that those are typically occupied by a single person, or just to lower the burden of parking?
I think it's both. I think it's to, we're looking for incentives for developers to build or create more workforce units. So sometimes parking can be an issue. The ability to create parking can sometimes be an issue. It costs money to create parking, and sometimes there's not enough space for it. So if we reduce the requirement, maybe that's an incentive to create the units. And the other thing is, if people have a more limited income, maybe they're more likely to be without a car, to use transit, to walk or bike. We find that that is more common in workforce units.
Understood. I appreciate, like I said, the giving me the background. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Wilhelm?
I don't have any questions, but I think I've been at every meeting at which you've talked us through this, which I think is 4 at this point, and I really appreciate your knowledge and patience in talking us through this, so thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Any other comments by the administration before I open it up to public comment? Thank you, Ms. Heller. So I will open it up for public comment. Again, this is for the public hearing. I'll go around the room if there's anyone who wanted to make comment on the amendments that we had discussed. Starting to the left, to the middle. Yes, Mr. Shire.
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. I have 3 comments. First is just incidental information, but recently I read that the cost of a surface parking space is roughly $20,000, and the cost of an underground parking space is roughly $60,000. So if you do reduce the number of parking spaces, it reduces the cost of the housing and makes it a little more affordable. Of course, on the other hand, if it could create gridlock on the for the parking spaces. Like I was recently over and on the reservation, as they call it, and the parking there is really tight, really tight. 2 other comments on the specific changes. The first is the having uniform setbacks, I think that's kind of a mistake, because when you have uniform setbacks, the streetscape is less interesting. And I commend to you Church Street right out here, right across the street. There are varying setbacks, and I do think it makes the block more interesting. And my second comment, what was my second comment now? I should make notes. I'll think of it later. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else who wanted to make comment during the public hearing on these amendments? Sir?
Alex Hirsch, 738 Center Street. Didn't realize I was going to be interested in that, but I guess my first thing as a parking-obsessed citizen is the statement that there's a surplus of parking. Is that based on a study? The director of the parking authority seems to have a very different understanding of that.
I don't think I said there was a surplus.
In abundance, I think, is the word you used.
Mr. Hirsch, I ask you to address comments to council, please.
Oh, okay. I thought I was actually asking over here. I'm sorry. I think the idea of decreasing parking resources within the city might not be a great long-term plan. With the setbacks, there was also mention of reducing the little yard space. I guess I didn't realize that was a requirement. As somebody who walks my dog a lot and everything, encouraging everybody to build right up to the sidewalk into the street seems like an awful idea for me. It's just a really, takes away a lot from the beauty of the city. And then finally, the removal of restrictions on signage. All of these kind of struck me as favors for developers and maybe not in the best interest of the city. A 200 square foot sign is huge. It's 10 by 20. It doesn't really matter to me what size your property is. Why do you need a sign bigger than that for your business? Again, with the idea being that maybe a little restraint could be appreciated. You can still get your message out there. People would still know that was your business.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Any other comments on the proposed amendments from the center? Mr. Shire, can I wait till your next turn at the lectern here as we give everyone one shot at the pinata?
Yeah, I think there's some room there.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. And I turn to the right. All right. So that concludes public comment. These ordinances will be placed on the December 6, 2022 council agenda for first reading and second reading and anticipated enactment on the December 20th, 2022 council meeting. The public hearing is adjourned. So now we're going to move on with our regularly scheduled city council meeting, starting with the approval of minutes for November 1, 2022. Any comments on the minutes? Minutes will stand approved. Continuing on with public comment, so we will start with any subject not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. A YouTube reminder to our YouTube audience, if you start this meeting after 7 p.m., please make sure to scroll ahead so that the YouTube stream is current rather than a recording of an earlier portion of the meeting. We have a few people signed up to speak, and then I'll open it up to anyone else in the room, starting with Ms. Lynn Rothman.
Good evening, Lynn Rothman, 870 Wofford Lane. I'm chair of the Bethlehem Environmental Advisory Council, or EAC. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of my fellow EAC members, Ben Felzer, Ben Guthrie, Vipor Kumar, Mandy Tolino, Katie Tembler, and Mike Topping. In accordance with our EAC bylaws, we submit the following year-end report for 2022. Our most important work this year has been supporting the city's climate action plan, which aims to reduce our carbon footprint and increase sustainability. In order to realize the goals of the CAP, we worked with the city's Department of Planning and Zoning, Codes, and Fire to update the city's solar ordinances. The proposed amendments were recommended to City Council by the Environment and Human Resources Committee, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and the Bethlehem City Planning Commission. City Council will vote on the ordinance amendments at their December 6th meeting. The Department of Planning and Zoning gives the EAC the opportunity to comment and make recommendations for proposed developments. Our recommendations are based on furthering the goals of the Climate Action Plan. All of our correspondence can be found on our website, BethlehemEAC.org, and in 2022 we commented on 15 proposed developments. A summary of other EAC activities include the following: membership on both the Pedestrian Bridge Working Group and the City's Climate Environmental Justice Council, made comments on proposed revisions to the subdivision and land development ordinances and the draft urban forestry master plan. We held a successful cleanup of the Monocacy Creek in partnership with the Monocacy Creek Watershed Association, tabled at Rose Fest at the Bethlehem Rose Garden, joined the Sierra Club and Coalition for Appropriate Transportation in forums on Bethlehem as a biking city, maintained and updated our website and Facebook page with increasing numbers of followers, and created an Instagram account. We re-engaged with Birdtown, PA, and are currently working on an annual report on behalf of the city. EAC members mentored three Lehigh University students in internships regarding green restaurants and tree ordinances. The Bethlehem, Allentown, and Easton EACs coordinated a virtual Lehigh Valley EAC Network Forum featuring Becky Bradley, Executive Director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Finally, we continued to welcome members of the public to raise issues and participate on our committees. We hosted 11 speaker presentations at our monthly meetings. These included the progress of the CAP, Southside Development and Environmental Justice, Lehigh students presenting on the Southside Permaculture Park and the Promise Core Solar Kiln Project, as well as the sustainability of operations by the Bethlehem Parking Authority. Details and the full list can be found in our written report on our website. Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife, an active standing committee of the EAC, had a productive year. The committee and community volunteers maintained native plant demonstration gardens on the Southside Greenway, the Hoover Mason Trestle at Steel Stacks, and the Rose Garden Pollinator Garden on the west side. They expanded and maintained the two native perennial gardens on 8th Avenue, the Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife, designed and planted in 2019. 25 interns from PPL and Air Products spent a morning in May learning how to identify and remove the weeds from the 10 garden beds along the Hoover Mason Trestle, as well as planting new native perennials. Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife looks forward to continuing this relationship next year. Our great appreciation goes to Tad Miller, City Clerk, and Judy Calachava, Assistant City Clerk, for their assistance. They respond immediately to all of our requests and answer our questions and facilitate communication between the EAC and City Council. Additional appreciation goes to Stephanie Agiello, Chief of Staff, for facilitating communication with the Mayor's Office. We are in debt to Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, Chief Building Inspector Mike Simonson, Deputy Chief Baer, and former EAC members Brian Nickus and Elizabeth Suchansky for their work on the amendments to the solar ordinance. We recognize and appreciate our City Council liaison, Kira Wilhelm, for her input, support, attendance at our meetings, and continued efforts on behalf of climate action. We also acknowledge and thank Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works, Craig Pfeiffer, Assistant Director of Planning and Zoning, and Steve Fernstrom, Executive Director of the Bethlehem Parking Authority, for their ongoing contributions to the health and welfare of Bethlehem City. We commend City Council and the administration for their support of the CAP and initiatives to make Bethlehem a greener, more pedestrian, and bike-friendly city. In 2023, we will continue to assist in implementing the goals and strategies of the Climate Action Plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rothman. We appreciate you and all the volunteers. Our next person signed up this evening, Mr. Hirsch.
Alex Hirsch, 738 Center Street. I'll be brief. Today is my wife's birthday, and she was not pleased that I was coming here this evening. So I will be brief, and I'm going to excuse myself from the meeting. I'm up to 123 days, still nothing. I know last meeting I mentioned, it was in the minutes, about the possibility of an ordinance change to define a proof of residency beyond the vehicle registration and driver, Pennsylvania driver's license, to include local income tax, property tax, water bill, whatever. So I guess that's kind of going to be my new focus until somebody points me in another direction. I don't know if there's any thoughts on that or what needs to happen just process-wise. Should I bring some proposed language in 2 weeks? Does somebody else draft that? Is anybody open to that? I don't know. That's where I'm at. So I guess there's a preview for next week. I'll try to, I like the idea of a year-end report, so I'll try to frame it as a year-end report. That's it. Thank you. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Happy birthday to your wife.
Thanks.
Yeah, don't forget.
Gotcha.
Our next person signed up, Mr. Caratola.
Greetings, everybody. I'm Artie Caratola from 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Excuse me for being so bold and blunt, but I've stated many times in the past at the city council meetings that Bethlehem should be an example to other cities throughout our nation because it is named after the city that Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, was born and reinforced it by calling it the Christmas City. Jesus Christ states in the Bible that we should be an example. Well, I don't believe that we've been doing as good of a job that we should. It gives me great pain and agita when I see the many things that we neglect to make it, that we take extra money from the lower and middle class people, but do everything that we can for the upper class. It's customary. This is one example. There's many of them. It's customary that in every city to give an extra hour of parking for handicapped people with handicap tags or licenses by meters or 1 to 2 hour limited parking zones. Some cities do better than that. Philadelphia used to give 24 hours or more. A few weeks ago, I came to my attention that we don't give the extra hour to handicapped people parking in 1 to 2 hour limited parking areas anymore. We used to, I know that for a fact. I mean, I didn't get tickets for years on that, and I have a handicap plate. At what point did we stop? We didn't even take the time and spend a little money to alert the people by at least a statement or a phone call to this change. All we want is the change. We couldn't even spend a small amount of change to a printer for stickers to be placed on the signs. 1 hour extra does no longer apply. How greedy does that make us look? It's a bad reflection to Bethlehem, the Christmas city. Please don't take offense to the statement that I'm about to make. I'm a military veteran since 1968. I did not dodge the draft, as many have who have been very successful through the blood, sweat, and debts of many others. I truly believe in the principles of the United States of America. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Maybe one day we'll see liberty and equality for all. But only if we start to set afloat all of those who are attempting to take our country, taking God out of our country, and giving them a one-way ticket out of the country, or at least hold them accountable for their actions and arrest them for treason, for they're attempting to overthrow our government. Then maybe one day, my friend, we'll all be free if the world don't end, and we'll live in happiness and trust together, you and me. As I stated in one of my songs that was accepted by World Peace Records and the United Nations. Yeah. Up until now, we've built this country by stealing and killing, and killing the people who God, our Heavenly Father, gave this country to. I don't believe that we can ever pay back for what we did to their forefathers and foremothers. We also stole their territory from the Mexican people, rightfully owned the land. But the thing is, we built this country by the sweat and blood also of the black men, the Irish and the Italians. We continue to do this. Many of us grow rich and prosper by the sweat, blood, and deaths of others. Maybe we need to have a new flag and change the stars' signs to dollar signs and the blue stripes to green for money, the red stripes to gold, because it appears that we are living and going in gold we trust. And, you know, like, gold and money seems to be our God. Or maybe we need to practice what we are saying that we are, a loving, sharing, giving people, as an extra example to the entire world to see. And we should start with Bethlehem. And maybe, I love you, I want you. We all need each other to love true, or we can't do what we really want to do, as our world anthem, as I sing in one of my other songs that I wrote, called World Anthem, that's also been accepted by World Peace Records and the United Nations. God bless you all. I hope we can do a little bit more to make this country more prosper and more of an example to the whole, all the other cities in our country. God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. Caratola. So again, this is public comment for anything not being voted on this evening. So anything anyone wants to share with council, I'll go around the room as we've exhausted the list. Starting to the left, turning to the center. Mr. Schotter.
Bill Schotter, 1898 Avenue. Tomorrow I will pay my quarterly bill that consists of various so-called charges and fees that are really taxes pretending to be something else. This is not to be particularly critical of the current administration. It applies equally to previous administrations and other city governments as well. Why are these charges and fees really taxes? Because they are required payments for a service provided by the city government. This is true for water and sewer, for recycling, and for the newest fee, the storm water fee. Why do city governments like to call these charges, call them charges and fees rather than taxes? Perhaps because it enables them to say they have not raised taxes. Even though we should expect taxes to rise because the cost of living almost always rises. Thus, to say taxes have not been raised is a half-truth. If they say that real estate taxes have not been raised, that is still only a three-quarters truth, to coin a phrase, because your real estate taxes will eventually go up if your property increases in value. The only completely honest and transparent statement is that real estate tax rates have not gone up. And this, of course, is true only some of the time. Again, this is not aimed at any particular administration or even any particular city. Not only are these charges and taxes really, these charges and fees really taxes, they are regressive taxes because they are the same for everyone, no matter how large your income is. Richer folks pay a smaller percentage of their incomes. Poor folks pay a higher percentage of their incomes. It would be nice if Bethlehem could lead the way in transparency. Otherwise, you might expect in the future a street light fee, a traffic light fee, a paved street fee, fees for fire police and fire promotion protection, and on and on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Anyone else in the center who wants to make comment? Mr. Antalik?
Stephen Antalik, 737 Ridge. When you were chosen to become a council member, more specifically a public servant, you swore under oath to obey all the laws and serve the public with fidelity. That oath did not bestow upon any of you superior citizen status, but to act responsibly as a public servant in your role as a legislative check and balance, and also to be the public's chosen watchdog over any actions, negative actions or misdeeds by the administration. Now, there have been a lot of comment made publicly and privately about appointments to the different commissions, and in some cases where highly qualified people were not reappointed, or people were on the agenda to be appointed but were not pursued. As a watchdog in supporting the public interest and welfare, these questions need to be asked. Since you are the chosen public servant, but they're not being asked. I've been over this many times. I'm trying to find reasons why these important questions aren't asked, because it's depriving the city of qualified people in high positions on commissions. And these highly qualified people are languishing, wishing to serve, but not being allowed to. That's negligence. Is it because you're all members of the same club, administration and council, the Democratic Club? Or is it because of passivity? It's very bothersome to me. Because I, as a citizen, and others behind me, the public, deserve you to, for you to be our watchdog, which you aren't being. You're not asking the questions that need to be asked. It takes courage. And also fulfills your responsibility as a watchdog and a check and balance to the administration. Totally beyond my comprehension.
Thank you, Mr. Antalik. Is there anyone else in the room who hasn't had a chance to speak yet who'd like to make comments to council? Moving on to our second public comment for comment on anything being voted on this evening. There is no one signed up, so I'll go around the room. Anyone who'd like to make comment on any ordinances or resolutions to be voted on this evening? Staying to the left, looking to the center, Mr. Shire.
Good
Oh, sorry, 1898 Navano. This is the second trifecta I've had in 20 years. I remember the thought I had about the miscellaneous zoning amendments, and that was if you, when you taking something out of the zoning ordinance and putting it in the saldo ordinance, I would caution that you put it into the saldo ordinance first before you take it out of the zoning ordinance, because otherwise there would be nothing on that subject for that period of time. And some of our developers are very nimble and might try to take advantage of it. My main comment now is about council approval of contracts, and I'm going to use the recycling contract as an example, but the remarks are general. The problem that exists right now is that council doesn't have much information about these contracts, and they're asked to approve them. The fact that council approval is sought is a good thing, but they are in an awkward position because in the absence of any more information, they're being asked to trust the administration to have done the right thing. And if they ask questions, it looks as if, well, maybe they don't quite trust the administration. Now, there's two solutions to this. One is to not have council approval of the contracts, and then the administration can bear the repercussions, if any. And the answer, the other answer, is to provide more information. Now, what kind of information should be provided? I'm going to take advantage of some experience I had with federal procurement to lay out some of the things that could be provided. The first is demonstrating the need for the contract. Now, in the case of the recycling contract, that's pretty obvious. The second thing, though, is to demonstrate, at least some of the time, that it can be done more efficiently by a contractor. In the federal government, there's a OMB Circular A-76 that says if the government can save 10% or more by contracting out, then that's a good thing. I was actually involved in one particular case. I won't go into the details, but the firm I was working for was hired to do such a study, and it turned out that the Army depots could do the job more cheaply than the proposal that had come in. And the end result was that the price of the proposal was reduced by $1 million. So the government saved a little bit of money there. So given that it's needs to be done and it can be done more cheaply by a contractor, then you have the choice between an RFQ, an RFP, or an unsolicited proposal. Now, for those not familiar with the acronyms, an RFQ is request for quotations. And that's when something is just so straightforward, the only thing that matters is the price. An RFP is when things are a bit more complicated and you have to have a statement of work. This is what the government wants, in sufficient detail that the contractor can't cut corners on you. Now, that's something that should be provided to the council. Say, for example, on the recycling contract. How often are they going to pick it up? What hours of the day? You know, you can think of a lot of things that should be specified and that council should be aware of. Then there's the question of how you... let me take the unsolicited proposal, which comes up perhaps from time to time. The federal government has a very specific rule on unsolicited proposals. They can only be awarded if it contains a unique and innovative idea that is not otherwise available to the government. That's pretty high bar. So, okay. We've got the proposals that come in. Council should know how many proposals there were, whether or not the lowest cost was awarded, and if not, why not, and how the proposals were evaluated. In the case of the Redevelopment Authority, they had various points for this or that. And like, as I recall, it was 5 points for historic preservation, up to 5 points, and some people thought that was too low. Council's entitled to know who evaluated the proposals, what the scores were from each evaluator, and whether or not an average or a median was used, which is, because sometimes people who evaluate proposals are tempted to sandbag the results by giving very high marks to the proposal they prefer and zeros to everyone else. So you can deal with that by using a median rather than an average. That's just some of the things that it would be useful for council to know.
Mr. Shire, I'm going to ask you to start drawing
into
the course,
into my final sentence, Mr. President.
Thank you.
I'll just repeat the idea I proposed some months ago, that when the administration has a meeting to pick a proposal, the chairman of the council committee that is most concerned with the subject would be present at the meeting, take part in the discussion, but not vote. And then, so there would be one person then on the council who would know all the details and could inform the other members of the council, so they don't have to be always voting on a pig in a poke. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Anyone else who wants to make comment on anything being voted on this evening? Any ordinances or resolutions? Mr. Antalik.
Stephen Antalik, 737 Ridge. Concerning the appointment to the Zoning Hearing Board, Administrative Order 7B1. Questions I might have are, when a person is appointed that implies a vacancy, is that vacancy created by the person on the board resigning their position and not reapplying, or they're not asked to reapply, implying that they were qualified before but not after? So in this respect, I suggest that the public needs to know what the city council needs to know, what information from the administration. So when council is given the bio of the person being appointed, I think that information should be available to the public also, so they can make an intelligent comment, since you are our servant. So, also, from the council, it says that council also appoints volunteers to various city boards and goes on to enumerate these boards. And also, Article 9 from the Third Class City Code, amended to 2014, Article 9, General Provisions Relating to City Officers and Employees, says that appointment and removal of officers, council shall have the power of appointing and dismissal of all city officers and employees other than elected officers, and shall provide for the removal of officers of the city whose offices are established by ordinance except otherwise provided by this act. Now, what does that really mean? And could council, in default of the administration not making appointments, do that on their own and say, we'd like to appoint someone to Historic Commission because it's been open and nothing's been done. So does Article 9 permit that, give that power? But I think council needs to be more active. Active. Because you're elected to do so, to take care of our welfare. So you're obligated to do that by your oath, to serve with fidelity. And if you look up, fidelity means doing your job. Also, I know, I guess council likes to have people from, at this podium, give them warm fuzzies rather than cold pricklies. As I used to tell my boys. Because I noticed when I'm 15 seconds over, I'm told about it, being rudely interrupted. But some people are allowed to go over because they're probably not giving cold pricklies.
Thank you, Mr. Antalics. Is there anyone else in the room who wanted to make comment this evening on anything being voted on? Seeing none, we're going to continue on with our agenda. Old business? Any old business for members of council? We'll continue on to communications. Communication 6B.
A memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Brendan Stanton Incorporated, doing business as BSI Electrical Contractors. The project consists of installation of components to improve the overall organic treatment capacity of the wastewater treatment plant. The electrical contract consists of a base bid plus one alternate. The base bid includes upgrading the existing electrical distribution system to provide power to new equipment, providing terminations and controls for heat tracing, and upgrading the instrumentation SCADA system to facilitate implementation of the project components. The alternate bid includes construction of reinforced concrete communication duct bank, providing above ground and underground raceways and boxes, and providing fiber optic cables, including terminations and testing. The contract is $674,000. Substantial completion is required within 365 days from the notice to proceed. Final completion required within 395 days of notice to proceed. There are no renewals.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
A memorandum with an attached resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, recommending a contract with Republic Services of New Jersey, LLC, doing business as Raritan Valley Disposal, to provide curbside recycling services. Price of the initial two-year term of the contract is $3,523,212. This is broken down by year one as $1,718,640 and year two as $1,804,572. Contract shall commence on January 1st, 2023 and run through December 31st, 2024. City and the contractor shall have the option for five additional renewal terms of 1 year each upon mutual consent of the parties.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum with an attached resolution from Steve Fernstrom, Executive Director of the Bethlehem Parking Authority, recommending that the 900 block of South Spring Street be included in the residential permit parking program. The majority of the residents of the 900 block has signed a petition submitted to the parking authority. The authority held a required public hearing on the matter at its September 28, 2022 meeting. The authority board of directors approved advancing this action to city council for its consideration.
And resolution 10C is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6E.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works, with an attached resolution recommending a contract with Bracalente Construction Incorporated involving City Hall garage surface repair. The original contract price was $265,957.69. Some of the all change orders is $44,810.41, and the updated total price is $310,768.10. Change order was necessary to cover additional work and increase in quantities of asphalt tonnage.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
Memorandum with an attached ordinance from Laura Collins, Director of the Department of Community and Economic Development, on behalf of the Recycling Bureau. The memorandum recommends that Council enact an ordinance to amend Article 933 to increase the recycling fee effective January 1st, 2023.
And the ordinance is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6G.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Stephen Pallone, Superintendent of Water and Sewer Treatment, requesting Council support of an application to the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development for a COVID-19 ARPA H2O PA grant. The grant will assist in replacing the nearly 100-year-old Southwest Reservoir located along Mountain Drive North in Lower Saucon Township. Estimated $1,935,450 project will demolish the existing reservoir and replace it with a 1-million-gallon tank. The grant is for $1,290,300. The city would have to match not less than 50% of the cost. Some must pay $645,150. Construction is not expected until 2024, at which time the appropriate funds will be budgeted in the water capital account.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
A communication with resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Department of Economic and Community Development, asking Council to submit to HUD an amended program year 2022 CDBG Home Annual Action Plan. The amendment is procedural, and the primary purpose is to allow the city to submit its program year 2023 Annual Action Plan next year, once the actual HUD allocation figures are known.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. That concludes our communications. I have no reports for this evening. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, President Cologne. I have a couple of reports. First is I have an administrative order. I hereby appoint Leah B. Grigsby, 79 West Church Street, Bethlehem, PA, to the Zoning Hearing Board. This appointment is effective through December 2026.
Leah B. Grigsby to the Zoning Hearing Board. The resolution confirmed is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Francie Smith.
Discussion on the appointment.
Just one question.
Dr. Ian?
Oh, okay. I didn't get a resume. Did you?
There was one. I know I received one. Was there anyone else from Council?
I came this evening and I asked my colleague here if she did, and she did not get one either. So, may I have one?
I don't know if it... Hang on one second. I don't know if I read it on our attachment from our...
It was online, I believe, but we didn't receive it in the packet, which I believe we always receive it in the packet, correct? Was it in your packet?
It was not
in the part that was in the clip. It was in the material that was under the clip, but it was in my packet.
Yeah.
Are you the only one?
I know I've heard. Ms. Wilhelm has it.
Well, it must have just been oversight then.
Yeah, I won't speak to exactly where it was at this.
It has a cover sheet. That looks like.
Thank you, Ms. Pinnell. While Dr. Enix is reviewing the resume, any other questions or comments from members of council? Dr. Van Wert.
And this is just a general request to the administration, not about this appointment. But it's very helpful, I think, there's a lot of scrutiny and attention put on these appointments, and I personally find it very helpful if we are let to know whose place they are taking. Is this a place that they decided not to renew, or is this someone an empty spot that's been empty? It helps us understand the flow in these very complicated authorities, boards, and commissions if we understand whose spot they would be taking. And it's just without me having to bother Ms. Kelechava, who then has to bother the administration if that information could be included. I think it would be very useful.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Along with that, I guess I would just request that, is there any way, if it's known who the appointment may be, that we can receive the appointment name and resume like a week or two before? Because getting it on a Friday night sometimes doesn't give us a lot of time to review. So it would be helpful if we can get it maybe a week or two before. And my only comment is I really applaud anyone who's willing to sign up for these ABCs, because I know it is a lot of time, their own time to do this. So my only concern is, I think because we just spent months working on the conflict of interest ordinance, that I just hope that we're cognizant of if there's any inherent conflict of interest in appointments. Because, for example, for this appointment, while I will support it, I just have to say that I hope that we're aware that the person's affiliation with Moravian University is not a conflict, or if it is a conflict at some point, that they will recluse themselves from voting. Because again, it's nothing against Moravian. I have many of my family are alumni and I work with them daily and weekly, and it's a great university. I really applaud what they do with student housing, but I just want us to be, I just want to be aware of the optics, and we're, careful in appointments and assuring that we're following the conflict of interest guidelines, that people will recluse themselves if necessary.
Thank you, Councilwoman Ramsey-Smith. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Seeing none, I will ask the clerk to call the roll on the appointment.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Just a couple other updates. First of all, I want to thank all the department heads and all the bureau chiefs and everything that helped to work on the budget that we had released last Friday. Obviously, we're going to be talking a lot more about that in the coming weeks, but there's been a lot of work that's been put forward as far as internal, as far as Mr. Evans and Ms. Lazarchak, as well as all of the department heads. And I want to just thank them publicly for all of their work there. And then just a couple other things. On Friday at 5 p.m., we have the tree lighting outside. Which is going to be a great event. And then also just Chris Kindlemart kicks off on Friday, and then it goes every weekend through December 18th, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I would just encourage people to get out there as well, if they can.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, President Colon.
Moving on to ordinances for final passage. We don't have any this evening. So continuing on into new ordinances, just a couple reminders before we get into the ordinances tonight as it relates to the 2023 budget ordinances. Just want to remind everyone that there will be two votes on the budget, just like we do all other ordinances. And all the following budget ordinances will have the second reading, tonight being the first reading, and that second reading will be at the December 20th City Council meeting. If any amendments to the budget ordinances are proposed, they will be considered at the final budget meeting scheduled for Monday, December 5th, 2022, here in Town Hall at 6 p.m. Tonight's vote is more procedural than anything, as it historically has been, as it's simply the first reading to get that out of the way. There will be adequate time for input and for amendments, as we have historically done. These votes typically pass through as part of the process with any objections saved for the time of the second reading. And of course, we will be going department by department, line item by line item at all of our scheduled budget hearings. We'll continue on with the new ordinances. I will ask the clerk to read Bill 26-2022.
An ordinance amending the zoning ordinance, Part 13 of the City of Bethlehem, Lehigh and Northampton Counties, Pennsylvania, amending solar energy devices. Bill 26-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey-Smith.
Discussion on the ordinance?
I just want to thank Ms. Heller for supplying a cleaned up version of it that showed the the additions and deletions all in one document. It made it a lot clearer for me, and to everyone for all the hard work on this. I do appreciate us trying to bring our ordinances into a place that encourage and rather than discourage solar. So thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Ms. Wilhelm?
I also, because she's here, I wanted to thank Ms. Rothman and the EAC for their work on this ordinance. As we heard in the annual report, it's one of many important projects that the EAC is working hard on, and this will show a demonstrable positive effect on sustainability in the city. I really appreciate all your work, and I'm honored to work with you. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to Bill 27-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 933, entitled Recycling, of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem by increasing the recycling fee. Bill 27-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? Ms.
Leon? I did have some questions about how the payment would be over the year, how we can reduce the cost of this. I know we've talked earlier, Laura, but Director Laura. Director Laura, yeah. And how this would look, and if somebody pays it late, could that adversely affect?
If this were paid late, it could adversely affect other services that they're receiving.
So if you can talk a bit to that, if you don't mind.
Hi. So yeah, the proposed fee increase is $20 a year, but residents are billed quarterly or in some instances monthly for like larger complexes generally, but so it would be a $5 increase per quarter, so that, you know, it would be spread out over the year, if that answers sort of the question that you were getting at. It's not a one-time $20 increase or a one-time payment of the full amount. As far as late payments, that might be a question better suited for Eric Evans, but you know, the bills that include the recycling fee, also include water and sewer, stormwater. So that all goes out together. The bill is for one lump sum, and late fees are applied to the entire bill. So if somebody had a problem paying a bill, it took, I believe it's after 11 days the penalties are applied. Is that right?
It's a gracious, a lengthy grace period, I should say, of the bill. The bill comes together for efficiencies. As Ms. Collins said, the water bill, the sewer bill, recycling fee, and the stormwater all together, so that when they go out, it's one envelope, one stamp going out and coming in one check. And the payment, for example, at my house when it arrives, my bill is about $180. It's broken up between those four. When the payment is made, and that's quarterly, so when the payment's made, it's prorated across, it's also itemized on the bill. If they do come in late, the grace period is extended. It's not our goal to collect fees, but just to collect the funding necessary to provide the service. So that's the way we have it set up.
Okay. And so it's a smaller part of a much larger bill, but it is spread out over the year. I know it might seem silly because it's like $20, but with everything increasing slightly, it's just not one $20 hit right up front. It is spread out over.
Correct.
Yeah. Thanks. I just wanted to make sure that that's.
And I would add to that, as far as water and sewer, it's not a situation, obviously, where if somebody doesn't pay their water or sewer bill today, somehow their water gets turned off tomorrow. And I can say that over the years, I know that they work with people. There's conversations and things like that. So it is something that they really try to work with people on. Obviously, like everything else, there needs to be regulations and rules, but also people use common sense in those situations as much as humanly possible to try to be as compassionate as possible and make sure that it is a situation where, you know, we're not turning off people's water and sewer because they happen to not get their bill in on Monday.
That was my thing.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Thank you, Ms. Collins. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Clerk will read Bill 28-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, County of Lehigh, and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the general fund budget for 2023. Bill 28-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Francie Smith.
Discussion? I'll just say that we all received our budget books last week. I was able, along with a few other members of council, had the opportunity to attend the mayor's budget presentation, which was greatly appreciated. Not even as a council member, as someone who lives here and now is a homeowner that I married into. So we appreciate all the information. And it was really, as I said before, as we go through these budget ordinances to our YouTube viewership and anyone in attendance, I'll remind you to come out to the budget hearings, because that's really, like I mentioned before, where we will get into the nuance of what the mayor presented and how the city's money gets spent, the things that people ask us, whether it's our friends and family or individuals who like to email us when they hear what our nighttime jobs are, about where this money goes or why taxes are this high or what's being done about this and that. It's all outlined in our budget book. It's not the most riveting information to go through, as I've gotten in the habit of doing the last couple years, but it is arguably the most important work that we do every year. And I appreciate the work that goes into it, just from an administrative standpoint, from the department heads down to every individual and every bureau who takes time to be cognizant of how their time and materials and supplies are used as it relates to how we spend our money here in the City of Bethlehem. Any other input from members of council? Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. Thank you, President Colon. And, you know, I have asked all of the department heads to make sure that they'll be meeting with Mr. Evans in the next couple of days or next week or two to just prepare their presentation and talk a lot about what those accomplishments have been in 2022 as far as what their goals are in 2023. But at the same point, though, if there are things that council wants the department head to focus on when we get to those areas, please feel free to reach out. If there's something as you're reviewing it, they say, I don't know how this works, or I want more information, or can you spend 5 minutes talking about this? Not that they can't do it on the fly as well, but it's just one of those things that if there's things in particular that council members would like to hear about, those are things that we can focus on as well. So, thank you, Mr. Coleman.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to Bill 29-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Water Fund budget for 2023. Bill 29-2022 was sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? We will call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to Bill 30.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Sewer Fund budget for 2023. Bill 30-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Clerk will read Bill 31-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Golf Course Enterprise Fund budget for 2023. Bill 31-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to Bill 32-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Liquid Fuels Fund budget for 2023. Bill 32-2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Francie Smith.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Please read Bill 33, 2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the capital budget for non-utilities for 2023. Bill 33, 2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on, Bill 34, 2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the capital budget for water utilities for 2023. Bill 34, 2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Bill 35, 2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the capital budget for sewer utilities for 2023. Bill 35, 2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Bill 36, 2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the CDBG budget for 2023. Bill 36, 2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion?
Yes.
Dr. Van Wert?
Hi. So this is just in the spirit of the mayor's offer to give us more information. This CDBG budget is really just a backwards look at what we spent priorities on, and I'll point out on page 299 that it's $1.4 million to purchase and develop a non-congregate emergency shelter, and then that's under CDBG. And then one that we're not voting on tonight, but is also relevant to what I would like more information on, is the general and civic expenses on page 177 for the homeless initiative is allotting $2 million. And we went through this at a previous joint committee meeting, and again, I fully understand the need and support the city's approach to building a shelter, but I will ask that the city come forward with really hard data on how we're going to pay the operating expenses each year, and whether that falls under a discussion of CDBG or the civic expenses. It's just something that I think we all need to understand while we're committing this money that's coming from the American Rescue Plan funds. That funding is not going to come from that going forward. So I would ask the administration to help us understand what that looks like in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Anwar. Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to Bill 37, 2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Stormwater Fund budget for 2023. Bill 37, 2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. And finally, Bill 38, 2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the tax rate for all city purposes for 2023. Bill 38, 2022 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
So I'll just note before we vote that the tax rate for both Northampton and Lehigh County, the tax rate has remained the same for 2023 as it has for 2022. And I will save other comments I historically do about our neighboring cities and their millage rate when it comes time during our budget hearings. Any other discussion from members of council? Clerk will please call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions. I'll ask the clerk to read Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Brendan Stanton Incorporated, doing business as BSI Electrical Contractors, for specified work at the wastewater treatment plant. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion.
I did have a question. Mr. Buscola, could you? I have a quick question. Thank you. Basically, my question is about the base bid and alternate bid. If you could clarify for us, does this $674,000 cover the cost of both of these, or these two different things?
Correct. It's can you hear me? Yes, it's base bid plus the alternates. It's the total cost for both.
Okay, so we will both be getting the upgrading of the existing electrical distribution system and the reinforced concrete communication duct bank, all of it?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all I had.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? We will call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Public Services of New Jersey, LLC, doing business as Raritan Valley Disposal for curbside recycling services. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Francis Smith.
I had a few questions for whoever wants to take them. Would that be Ms. Collins? Please. And I know we've been given...
I reserve the right to turn to Director Michael Forster if I get so deep in the weeds on recycling.
I don't know if I'm going to get that deep in the weeds, but just a couple general things, and I know we have been given the heads up a little bit ago about this contract and would appreciate the notice. So just kind of referencing some things previously discussed first. So if you could just touch on the difference between single stream and dual stream recycling and how this contract changes past practice to new practice.
Sure. So dual stream recycling is what we have now, where each of us as residents will separate our paper and cardboard from our glass and plastic, put those in separate containers. The hauler will come, we'll pick up the two separate containers, put them in separate compartments. Drop them off at our yard waste facility, and then our processing contractor will come and pick them up separated. Single stream is where you throw everything together in the same bin. So just one recycling bin, all the different types of recyclables together at the consumer end, still gets picked up by the hauler, goes with our processing company, Kugels, and they will then do the separation like as part of their processing. Which they do also when we do the dual stream, like there's a separating component of that. It's just that now they will do more separating at that stage of the process, and we as residents will be throwing everything together.
So are we still, does it matter if we use the blue or green bin now?
It does not. And Mike Halforster is working to put together informational flyers that we're going to be able to send out to residents. I'm sure we'll talk in the newsletter as well about the process change and what that means for your blue or your green containers. You can throw all types of recyclables in both containers, but it is going to be important. You know, one of the comments about single stream recycling is that the material is less clean, right? Because you might have a little bit of, you know, juice left in your glass, and then it gets on the paper, and the paper's wet, and it, you know, potentially contaminates. So it will be important for residents to know that the best practices for recycling are an important part of the process. So that's part of, like, the educational piece that Mike will be, you know, thinking about as well. So, like, to help make sure that in the switch we're still having clean product coming out of it.
And moving over to single stream is cheaper than dual stream in terms of, I mean, the contract, as we know, just given the market conditions, already there was a noticeable increase. We understand why. I'll say I understand why. But single stream would be a
It is. It's the least. Rate. It's the least expensive. You know, we went out to bid. We bid both the dual stream and the single stream option. We also bid both processing the materials ourselves versus the hauler processing the materials. So we bid out the four options, and what came back as the lowest bid was the single stream option that we're presenting to you. So yeah, that is that. And then as far as, I'll just also say on the materials piece, one of the things that we think is very promising, you know, in this debate between single and dual stream, is that it's generally understood that more people will recycle in the single stream process. So that's the typical debate is cleanliness of the material versus participation. It's generally very well understood that more people will participate because it is easier for a consumer to put everything together. And potentially by a fairly significant amount. And then it's just a matter of making sure that those materials are clean enough so that overall, on balance, the change is actually beneficial from a climate perspective. And that's something we've been talking with our climate action plan consultant with. We've been talking with them about this, and their conclusion actually was that this is going to be a net positive for us from a climate perspective. But they are going to work with us as well as we're putting together the informational materials to, like, really make sure that that happens.
Understood. Thank you. And then in terms of the contract itself, so we're locked into 2 years, and then it's 5 one-year options after that, correct?
Correct.
With the previous contract, how many years were we engaged with? How many years were we locked into that contract?
So that was a four-year contract that we entered into in 2018. So this would have been our first renewal year. So that contract was 4 years, also had the options for 5 one-year renewals, but Republic said no to exercising the option.
And we could potentially opt out if we thought it was more favorable to do so and rebid it.
In 2 years, yes, exactly.
Understood.
Yeah.
And then the last question, pizza boxes. Are still no, or is that changing now?
Pizza boxes are still no.
Okay. I'll still be a yes on the contract, but understood. Those conclude my questions. Any other questions or comments from members of council? It's Dr. Van Wert.
I think Ms. Carno gave us a presentation back in 2018, and if I can reach back from that, one of the questions that I had for you is she had alluded that it was a really difficult, and I don't understand recycling economies at all, but that it was a really difficult recycling market because traditionally our recyclables had been bought from overseas and that market demand was decreasing, and in fact our recyclables were getting stockpiled in places waiting for that future, and it just makes me question, like, what are we doing? I mean, are we really, are our goods from Bethlehem today ending up in a place where they're being actually turned into something else? Or, like, what can you just tell me, like, do we have a healthy recycling economy so we can be guaranteed that all this is for something?
Sure. So I'll take the question in two parts. But so first, like, on where our materials actually go, like I said, when they are picked up by the hauler, which is Republic, they come to our yard waste facility, they're placed in bunkers, and then Kugels, which is the processing company, will come on a daily basis and pick those up. Mike Halforster gets this question often. He has been out to Kugels a number of times, has a very good working relationship with their representatives, is very familiar with their process, and, you know, I don't know that he follows them directly to, like, where they're taking the materials, but, you know, if you, Mike, I'm not sure if you have more to say about it, but he's, you know, really on top of, like, the work that the Kugels contractors are doing with our materials after they take them.
Good evening.
Yes, actually, we do spot check. I actually do follow the truck out from our facility to the recycling center itself. They're also, when the material arrives, it is weighed on certified scales, and that material is mixed on the floor with other materials, and it is actually recycled and processed. They will sell it to different brokers within their network that they have with brokers itself. So we do get that question very, very frequently, particularly from residents that do not understand why they have to sort it for us when a lot of our neighboring municipalities, Allentown, Easton, Hanover Township, they do participate with the actual single stream process itself. So we do make sure that we do spot check. I probably do 6 to 8 spot checks a year. I'll follow the truck out after it picks it up at our facility. We also have residents that ask, once it's picked up curbside, how do we know it's going to your facility? The trucks are there every day. We check the trucks off. We know what's coming in off of our street. So we're very in tune with how the material is handled and where it actually goes after it leaves our facility.
Is it recycled domestically or overseas?
Well, a few years back, there was some legislation passed at the federal level where a lot of overseas materials weren't going back overseas. They weren't being sold to overseas markets. That's why you started to see the market itself start to deteriorate, particularly over the last 4 years. I think the mayor had mentioned it in his budget address. I think it was 2012, the city had gotten $800,000 material for our materials, and now that's actually shrunk down to $100,000. That just really goes to show you how much the market has deteriorated over the last 10 years.
Thank you for that explanation. My last question is very quick. Is the frequency of pickups stays the same? Nothing else really in terms of service for our citizens is changing at all?
Yes, nothing's changing. With respect to President Colon's question regarding the containers, you can still utilize your containers. You just won't have to mix them. So I guess I just say ignore what's written on the side of them, and you can mix the material together.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's all my questions.
Any other questions or comments?
I have a couple of quick questions. I'm sorry, did I?
Okay.
First of all, starting in January, you can put everything in whatever bins, right? Not yet. The contract actually begins in January 2023,
correct.
So I just want to clarify that before everybody starts going crazy mixing their plastics and their papers. Wait until January. One question I did have, though, was the impact that would have on our Kugel's contract. Is this more work for them? Would we foresee a change in the terms of that contract?
Fortunately, we're lucky. We won't see much of a change at all. They do handle both dual stream materials as well as single stream. The only change for them is we're going to see, as Laura alluded to, they're going to do a little extra sorting for us.
Right.
So we're going to see a little less on the commodity side of it, but the big pickup is really on the transportation end of it with what we had with Republic. There was quite a spread, as you know, and there was quite an increase from the 1.1 million to the 1.7. So we'll see a little bit of an uptick there, but they are able to handle our materials. It's not a change for them that's going to really affect us. So we'll be fine on that aspect.
Great. And so also to clarify that the terms of the additional renewal terms, that's a mutual consent situation. So they would have to want to. This is what has happened now.
Correct.
That the current vendor we have doesn't want to extend. So. And I just want to thank you for being so transparent and forthcoming with all of the information, giving us the heads up that this was coming down the pike, making us aware. I know that a $20 a year impact is more for some folks in the city than others, but still seems, when spread out over four quarterly payments, to be a fairly reasonable increase considering how much the cost of everything is going up right now. So I appreciate your hard work on getting us a reasonable contract.
I just have a couple of questions. I'm just wondering, for the residents, will the schedule of pickup or the zones where the pickup is occurring, will that change at all? Like if you're getting picked up on a Sunday night, is that going to continue, or Monday morning, is that going to continue, or will there be a change in the schedule?
No schedule changes whatsoever.
Okay,
everything
great.
Will remain the same.
Okay, great. And also, how will we get the information out to the residents as far as a change and the fact that it will be single stream?
So we were just talking today, actually, about putting together a mailer. Is the best way to be sure that we're reaching everyone who has the recycling service. So we're just nailing out the details of that. But we think that that's the best start. I also mentioned the newsletter, which will be you know, later in the year, but at least will be another reminder. We can use our social media outlets, the city website, the Recycling Bureau page, and Mike's going to kill me for saying this, but like their telephone lines are always open if people have questions. They've got great, you know, customer service and are going to talk people through if there are questions or you know, confusion about the switch.
We're going to hit every major social media that we can, so people are aware of the change that's going on. The flyer is going to be the big thing, really, where we're going to be able to get it out to the folks. It'll be a bilingual flyer, by the way, so we're making sure that we handle as many diverse, sending out the notice as best as we can as far as getting it. We're looking at probably sending out about 24,000 flyers to the residents that participate in this particular recycling contract.
And hopefully our friends here from the news media hopefully can do a story and get the word out too. The only other question I have is Republic Services was the provider, but it says here Republic Services, DBA, Raritan Valley. So is Raritan like taking them over, or what is the...
I think that's their existing relationship. That's another Mike question.
I can actually explain that. Sure. Raritan Valley Disposal was a privately owned company. Mm-hmm. They were acquired back in the early 2000s by Republic Services of New Jersey. So rather than go through the permitting process, whenever a company is bought by another one to change the permits as being a waste and recycling hauler, you have to change the permit names over. So rather than change the name from Raritan Valley and spend all that money, because it is quite expensive, they just go with the Republic Services LLC of New Jersey, Republic Services of New Jersey, LLC, DBA, Raritan Valley Disposal. So that's why they make that particular. It's still the same company. It's not anybody different. In fact, when the city first put this out many, many, many years ago under the former director, Mr. Marshall, they were the original leader that was doing the work. And their company was just acquired by Republic Services, and they have continued that contract since its inception many, many years ago.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Very quick.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Quick question. So we talked about the renewal and that we're in for two and then we can renew for up to five. Do I understand correctly that the bid specifications state that the rate will not go up more than, or the price will not go up more than 5% each of those years? Is that correct?
Correct. So the bid came in, we bid out for 2 years. So we know the number for 2023, we know the number for 2024, and then the increases can be no more than 5%.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Mr. Mayor?
Just a couple comments. One is that I do think from the education point of view, obviously people are going to want to separate them. I mean, they're going to be putting it all in the same truck, so it's not going to be as important as far as the education that, like, you no longer have to, other than people just getting frustrated if they separate them. But they're all going in the same trucks, so that'll be good. And I think Councilwoman Kwiatek, as far as one of the questions that we don't know financially going forward, is just how much more we're going to collect based on how much more WSP and others have said that you should be able to collect more because it's easier. And then just, I want to just say, Dr. Barron-Ward, I think you have great, there was a great questions as far as, like, why are we all doing this? Like, and if you look at it, it's obviously the state mandate, but, like, what are we actually doing at the end of the day? It is an absolutely legitimate question to ask overall, as far as where, you know, what is the, how much of it is actually getting recycled? And not to take a page from Lynn Rothman's book, but she would say, like, it's reduce, reuse, and then recycle. So a piece of the education is not just that we're recycling, but it's that we really need to find ways to reduce and we need to reuse. And I think that also falls on one future thing for us as a city when we look at recycling and things like that going forward is in our climate action plan is how do we, I think for a long time, and this was good, people felt like if I recycled, I was doing the best thing I could, but it's not the best thing we could. And as you correctly pointed out, the way this whole thing is going and the direction it's going for a lot of reasons with global economies and so on and so forth, recycling is not as good as it once was because it just doesn't have that same kind of value add, best use. But it is a great point that at the end of the day, like, we need to also be pushing other behavior change before we even get to that recycle part. And I just wanted to comment on how on point I thought that was. Thank you, Mr. Kwan.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. One other thing I'll note for everyone, on page 3 of our budget books, under under departmental earnings, you will see, and we'll talk about this in future meetings, there is a line item for recycling for the sale of materials. As Mayor Reynolds had mentioned, that the market for commodities has dropped significantly. Yeah, you could go back to our budget books, doesn't go back that far, but anyone, members of council or members of the public, could go on our website and through our open data portal, look at kind of the historical trends and what those earnings have produced over the years, to just see, as we try to balance budgets and offset costs, how those earnings have dropped significantly over the last number of years. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Ms. Collins. Thank you, everybody. I will ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Leo?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Whereas pursuant to Section 534.05 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, residents of the 900 block of South Spring Street have requested that the block be designated as a residential permit parking area. And whereas all property owners with said block have consented to this designation, and whereas Bethlehem Parking Authority Board of Directors has moved to recommend inclusion of the block in the RPP program, now therefore be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the 900 block of South Spring Street is hereby approved for inclusion in the residential permit parking program. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion?
Yeah, sorry. It's my night for having lots of things to say. This one brought really came to my attention. Originally, there was a typo, and so I had thought it was the block literally next block to me, but it's actually three blocks down from me. And so it's a street I know very well, and so this was the first time that we've had a residential permit parking request since we've been on council, and it being literally three blocks from my house, I took the opportunity to ask Mr. Fernstrom some questions and to learn more about the residential parking permit process. And what I found that I thought was very interesting was that there are these zones all over the city, and then there also are there's the opportunity to do this where there isn't a zone, and that's the case here because none of Spring Street is in an RPP zone. So then what happens is the neighbors can get together. Someone would have would bring around a petition, and if the majority of residents on the block want it, it then moves forward to the parking authority, and they do a bit of a study to determine whether it meets the criteria. And the criteria are laid out in the ordinance, and they are that at least 50% of the street level front footage use is residential or non-business related, and that during any period between the hours of 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. on weekdays except holidays, the number of vehicles parked and or standing legally or illegally at on-street parking spaces is equal to 70% or more of the legal on-street parking capacity of the area. So for the purpose of this evaluation, a legal parking space is 20 linear feet. So, and then at the same time, 25% or more of the vehicles on the streets in this area, in this case it's one side of one block of Spring Street, are not registered in the name of a person residing within three blocks, with the exception of those vehicles registered to residents living on an adjacent street having been already zoned RPP within a three block area, so it could go out and out and out because of the three block area thing. And so I looked at this and I asked Mr. Fernstrom, like, is there some kind of comprehensive strategy to this? Is there, does the parking authority, do they look and see, okay, this one side of one street on Spring Street, there are almost no streets on the west side that have this RPP designation, even though there are zones. Because it's not necessary. If there's parking. I mean, if I went out on the street right now and I knocked on my neighbor's doors and I said, so what do you think of the parking? They'd be like, oh, it's horrible. You know, I can never find a spot. And yet somehow everybody always finds a spot within, either right in front of their house or not, but very close by. We're on the same street. And the people on the 1,000 block, I would think, would be more concerned because they have Calypso across the street, and so they have half the parking on their block, and yet they have not requested an RPP. So the other question I asked was, you know, basically all of these streets have alleys behind them, and the vast majority of us have access to either a parking pad or a garage that's already there, or the ability to put in a parking pad behind our houses. And he said that the BPA doesn't look at that the ordinance doesn't include any language that excludes anyone with a parking pad, driveway, garage to be excluded in any criteria. And he did say it was a good question, so at least it was a good question, because it just seems to me that the city doesn't necessarily owe every resident the right to have to park their car in front of their house. So the streets are part of the commons, and we all live on them, but that doesn't mean that, you know, if I have a neighbor who has two Ford F-250 trucks that take up six spots, that they, you know, have a right to do that. And there is a charge for the permit, $20 the first year, $10 every year after that. So we're kind of privatizing the commons in that sense, that we are telling these people who live on this block, this one side of one block on all of Spring Street, that for $10 a year, they can be guaranteed a spot in front of their house. I thought the whole thing was extraordinarily fascinating to me. Maybe it's not to you folks at home. That's fine. I just wanted to bring this up because to me, it felt like we have both a zone system of all of like 12 different zones all across the city, and yet then there's still an application system within those zones to have an RPP, to have permits in your area. And yet there's also still a way that if you're not in a zone, you can also do this. I'm going to continue the conversation with the parking authority and take a closer look at the ordinance. For tonight, I'll be voting no on this. So thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Ms. Kwiatek. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Dr. Van Wert?
I talk to Mr. Fernstrom pretty regularly. I'm the liaison to the BPA. And, you know, I do agree that this ordinance itself, I don't know what the date of it is, but I think it's fairly antiquated. It may not reflect best city parking practices. And it may be time to look at that. And he's done a lot to... the BPA just received a professional accreditation that's very difficult to obtain, and I have a lot of confidence in his leadership and his ability to kind of guide us in terms of what is best parking practices for a city where there are areas that are extremely tight, but we are also trying to not encourage, you know, two cars for every house, and how do we help this city migrate to a more pedestrian-friendly presence. And one of the questions I asked him was, like, why is that block not in the, like, why does it have to come to city council for this? And he didn't know, because I think those lines were probably drawn in the 60s, I'm guessing. So I think there's probably a lot of opportunity here to help figure out the best parking practices for our city. Thank you.
Just to quickly respond to that, there are certain zones that have been added over the years. There are zones that are from like 1990, and then there are zones that are from maybe 2005, 2006. So zones have been added over the years. But on the west side, interestingly enough, the zones have always been bounded on the south by Prospect Avenue and bounded on the north, I think, by Union Boulevard. So it's quadrants of this part of the city. But Spring Street, Lehigh Street have never been any of the zones. So this one has to go through the extra step of the evaluation and then the vote. But yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Ms. Ramsey Smith.
I guess I'll just comment because I know folks on my block had looked into this and were considering at one point, and there were a lot of pros and cons, and majority of people in my neighborhood did not want to go through with this. There's a lot of things to consider. Like I, for one of the issues was if you have like adult children that then come home, what do? You have to buy them a permit or they have to go park somewhere else. But again, I could see the pros and cons of both sides. I guess looking at this, I read, and thank you for the questions, Councilwoman Kwiatkowska, that I read the answers to those questions, and I guess I feel that it looks like the majority of people in that block really want this. So I thought, well, I will support it if that's the case.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
And Mr. Colomb?
Aye. Passes 6-1. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Bracalente Construction Incorporated for a change order associated with the City Hall Garage Resurface Repair Project. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, of Lehigh, and Northampton Counties, requests a COVID-19 ARPA H2OPA grant of $1,290,300 from the Commonwealth Financing Authority to be used to replace the 2 million gallon Southwest Reservoir in the Lower Saucon Township. Be it further resolved that the applicant designates Mayor J. William Reynolds, Director of Water and Sewer Resources Edward J. Buscola, and City Controller Georgiasso to execute all documents and agreements between the City of Bethlehem and Commonwealth Financing Authority to facilitate and assist in obtaining requested grant. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Cramson Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Whereas federal regulations allow the City of Bethlehem to prepare a substantial amendment to its program year 2022 CDBG Home Annual Action Plan, and whereas the City has prepared a proposed substantial amendment to its program 2022 annual action plan, whereas the city held a public hearing on November 4th, 2022 and made the action plan amendment available for public display through the required comment period running October 14th, 2022 through November 14th, 2022 and on its website. Now therefore be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem, the program year action plan amendment for the City of Bethlehem for the period from January 1st, 2022 to December 31st, 2022 is hereby approved, and that the Mayor of the City is authorized to provide the necessary assurances and certifications to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and to submit that action plan amendment for HUD approval. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Before we get into the COAs, I will accept a motion and a second to consider resolutions 10G through 10J as a group.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Ms. Wilhelm, second by Ms. Cramsey Smith. Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. The clerk will please read the resolutions.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolutions are hereby granted for 77 West Broad Street to install 3 directory signs for emergency personnel and customers. 574 Main Street, to install one double-sided hanging sign on an existing bracket. 438 High Street, to paint certain trim details on the front porch of the home. And 30 East Market Street, to install lighting fixtures at the rear entrances of apartments 2 and 5, as well as install lighting fixtures above the left side rear steps. This work is required by rental inspection on September 15, 2022. Resolutions are sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Francis Smith.
Any discussion on the group? We will call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. COA's passed 7-0. New business? Any new business from members of council?
I wanted to just clarify that there is a lot of work that my colleagues and I do beyond the time that we're sitting here at the dais. We have a lot of conversations with folks from the administration. I've sat across the desk from most people here and many others. Understandably, you're not aware of all the conversations that we have, the questions that we ask, the research that we've done. I just want to give that assurance that this is an extremely hard-working group of people who, again, I feel quite confident in saying that we are doing the work that you elected us for. You just can't necessarily see it all.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Appreciate that. I just have two quick questions. I was just curious why the tree lighting is going to be happening before Thanksgiving, because has that happened in the past?
Last year, I believe, was the first year that they did it. It was a request of just a lot of the downtown merchants because it expands like the just the holiday season for people to get downtown. So I think last year it was made the decision between the DBA and the merchants and the chamber to move it a week forward to extend that kind of downtown season.
Okay, thanks. And then the only other question I have was about, I saw the Goodman building groundbreaking, and I was just curious about, it's going to be, I think, 12 rental apartment units. And when I read it, I'll be honest, I thought, wow, what an opportunity for affordable housing. So I'm just wondering, do we have any idea what the rates are going to be as far as the rentals?
The goal is affordable housing. That's what they have talked about in the past. They are still looking for tenants as well for the Goodman building. But that's what they have shared is their intention. But that's kind of what they've shared is their intention now. To make those affordable units, but they need financing. They need all sorts of different things. So I think it's a little bit early it was a little bit early for any type of assurances, but they have expressed an interest in that.
Okay, great. But I guess we don't have any more specifics. Like, are you looking at all the units being affordable, or just a percentage, or?
As I said, I think that's the goal. But I think that some of it is going to come down to what kind of tenants they get in the Goodman building on the commercial side, as far as how much money they're bringing in from that to make the overall project work.
Okay. All right, that's it. Thank you.
Just going off of what Councilwoman Cramsey-Smith said, because I was going to bring up the Goodman building, like a lot of things that happen in terms of big projects and things that aren't just discussed at one council meeting, that was a very, very long process. That building was truly falling down, and I know the Law Bureau deserves a lot of credit, and a lot of people at City Hall deserve a lot of credit. Unfortunately, it took turns that were it went places it didn't have to in terms of legal proceedings and things like that. But now that is a project that, as was noted, the groundbreaking occurred last week, and we are further along, as I like to say, moving the ball forward, that whatever is going to happen there, we're a lot closer today than we were a year ago, and it's been a years-long process. So again, thank you to everybody at City Hall, and then of course there's been from the private sector interest in turning that into something more favorable for the city than what it was left to become. And quick question for the administration, the housing survey that's online, I've already seen it pushed out a bunch of places. someone very close to me who may or may not live with me said they did it without me even bringing it up to them. So they were able to become aware of it without my nudging. When does that come down? Do we have a date yet that's going to conclude and come off the website?
We think it's the end of November.
Okay.
Just to add to that, I believe, and don't quote me on the exact number, that we've already had over 3,000 people complete that.
Wonderful.
And that was last week at some point. So I want to thank everyone that shared that. But yeah, we've had over 3,000 responses.
Great. Thank you. You're around. Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Mr. Cohen.
Yes, Ms. Clinton.
First of all, I thank you, Ms. Wilhelm, because that's something that has been weighing on my mind. I do think that when we all took office in January, speaking for myself, I knew that I was going to put in the work, the work that is unseen, the work of following up and asking the head of the parking authority 10 questions and having them answer, knowing that I can send an email, sit down with folks from the administration, from all different departments to talk about things. I greatly appreciate that. Having said that, we all also, this is a part-time position, and most of us have full-time jobs, and so there are only so many hours in the day, and Mr. Shire isn't here anymore, but just with regard to the idea that we would be involved in every RFP award process at the moment of award, I think is not perhaps beyond not feasible in terms of our schedules, also perhaps not appropriate in every case. However, we do get this information a bit of time in advance, sometimes more in advance than other times, and we do have the opportunity to follow up with questions, and I always appreciate the department heads coming out, like Mr. Biscola, Mr. Alcall, Ms. Collins, everybody who comes out and sits here, 4 hours after the end of their workday to answer our questions very patiently and explain to us how things work. So I want to say I appreciate that. There's also something that's been really weighing on my mind a lot since we started in January. I'm Jewish, and I live in the Christmas City, and I love it here, and it's a very special place. And it's always been a little bit of a joke between my husband and I that I'm a Jew in the Christmas City. However, especially with the rise of anti-Semitism that's been happening, which I think we can all recognize, to be constantly sort of lectured to about Jesus Christ at a city council meeting in the United States of America, where we literally in the First Amendment to our Constitution have a very clear line separating church and state, not establishing a state religion, that includes not establishing a city religion. I just want to remind folks that we are a beautiful, diverse city, people of many faiths and people of no faith, and people who choose to live their lives in a different way. And so I would just appreciate it if folks were a little more sensitive to that. I mean, there is the First Amendment also includes the right to free speech, and everybody gets their 5 minutes, so I understand that. But just to share a little bit, perhaps personally, that is something that impacts me when it happens. So I want to thank you for listening about that. And that's it for me. I've talked a lot tonight. That's enough.
We're all here for it. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, just two things. One is I concur with everything Councilwoman Kwiatek had said. But the second thing is, in a transition to a completely different subject, I think one thing we heard tonight as far as parking was concerned is, and I really appreciate the comments from City Council, Dr. Van Wert, I agree with you that I think a lot of those ordinances and resolutions about parking were written in a different time in the 20th century, and I think that as a city, we need to take a look at that. I agree with what Councilman Kwiatek said, is that there are some people that believe that they have the right to a spot in front of their house on a public street paid for by public tax dollars, which just isn't the case. And I just say this because our philosophy on parking as a city is going to become more and more important in the future. It is a huge driver, as I think Mr. Shire had referenced before, when it comes to any type of new housing as far as building parking. And it's going to be a balance and a trade-off between parking convenience for people and how people feel about parking and making parking available versus the cost of housing. It is one of the drivers. And it's why, as Ms. Heller said before, we were talking about parking minimums, and it is a huge driver. And one of the things that makes it, you know, such an issue in the city is that a lot of us live in neighborhoods where we have off-street parking, and it is not an issue for us. And for us to make decisions about where we put potential new housing, where there's any land available, whether or not you're putting any more dense housing in resource-rich neighborhoods, whether or not you're taking into account parking and things like that, is a huge question. And so we're just going to have to make some parking decisions about how important it is, that convenience of parking to people. I'm not one of those people that thinks that's the way to make good urban decisions for the next 100 years, but we're going to be tested on that. And we're especially going to be tested when we start to deal with the idea of electric charging stations, because the fact that electric vehicles are coming, and we know they're coming, and I'm sure you've all seen the numbers in the next 5-10 years what the major car companies are going to do as far as electric charging stations are concerned. Some of us are going to be able to put those in our driveway, in our garage, but a lot of those are going to have to go in the street. And we've seen in other cities, when those go on the street, who are the first people that are able to buy electric vehicles? People that have the money to buy an electric vehicle. But at the same time, you can't encourage people to buy them if they have no place to plug them in. And there's no good answer to this question. And we've watched, and I'm not trying to scare anybody, but you've watched in other cities, when they take federal dollars and put in the charging stations, how controversial they become in neighborhoods. It happened in Philadelphia, where they could put two in the neighborhood, and it becomes something that all these people float. Why are those two people that have enough money for an electric car be able to get the two spots that are here? And it is just something that we are going to have to be very engaged in as a city as we go forward, because those days are coming. I think we've all seen that the major car companies say they're not going to make any non-electric cars by 2035 or whatever that is. We can't wait till 2035 to start building an infrastructure. We've started doing that in our garages and things like that. But in our dense neighborhoods, when you're looking at the avenues, when you're looking at 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th Street, when you're looking at the areas in and around some of our colleges and universities, It's going to be something that we're going to have to really spend a lot of time thinking about from a kind of rational point of view. And I'm not saying that there's an easy answer to it. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a difficult kind of conversion over a number of years. But it's just something that we're going to increasingly have to talk about. And some of that's going to come down to this idea, as I think Dr. Van Wert said, about just this convenience of parking as far as what the way these ordinances and resolutions were originally written. So I didn't want to end on a bad note, but all of you had such a rational conversation about parking that it was a transition to that it needed to be said. And as we start talking about housing, that parking convenience and what it's going to do to neighborhoods versus the cost of housing is going to be one of those trade-offs that we're going to have to balance. So on that optimistic note, Mr. Clone, I'm complete. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Rowe. Everyone get home safely. Thank you for joining us.